seriously consider apologizing. But before I can form the words, ice-cold liquid seeps through my pants and into my crotch, from the glass of water Kate just poured into my lap. "Are you fucking crazy?" I whisper harshly, trying not to make a scene as I jump up and wipe at the stain with a napkin. "Everything all right here?" It's Anderson. He's back and looking from me to Kate. I shrug awkwardly as Kate smiles and tells him, "Everything's fine." There's that word again. See what I mean? Drew just had a little mishap with his water glass. You know, boys, can't take them anywhere. Anderson laughs and sits back down while I weigh my chances for an acquittal. The one I'll need after I strangle Kate Brooks. An hour later, we're waiting for coffee and dessert. Kate has left the table. I'm thinking her bladder must have been seconds from rupturing for her to actually leave me alone with Anderson. He observes me for a moment and then says, "I like what I've seen here tonight, Drew. Very impressive." "Thanks, Saul. In business, always use first names. It's not disrespectful. It shows that you're an equal, in the same league. That's huge. And based on what you've shown me, I'm ready to give Evans, Reinhardt, and Fisher my business." "Yes. Break out the champagne, baby. I'm pleased to hear that. I think this deal is going to be very profitable for both, that is, all of us. Can't forget Kate, right? As if she would let me. You can put your complete confidence in Kate and me. We won't let you down." He fingers his crystal glass. "Right. About that. Before I sign, I have only one contingency." This kind of thing happens all the time. Not a big deal. "Go ahead, Saul. I'm sure we can provide whatever you need." "I'm happy to hear that. So, why don't you have that darling girl of yours, Kate, bring the contracts by my place tonight, around midnight?" He hands me a business card, and I feel like there's a boulder in my stomach. Can you feel it, too? "Here's where I'm staying. You have her bring the papers. Alone." You know on TV when there's one of those awkward, shocking moments, and all you hear are the crickets in the background? Well, chirp, fucking chirp. This is one of those moments. "I'm not sure I..."
"Oh, sure you do, Drew. You know how it is. When a man's working late and needs a little comfort, a distraction."
"How about my foot up your ass, Saul? How'd that be for distraction?"
"And that girl of yours is one prime piece. My business will bring your firm millions in revenue, and that's not including the additional clients you'll get once word gets around that I'm with you. I'd say a little after-hours servicing is a small price to pay, wouldn't you?"
He makes sense, in a sick, perverted, registered sex offender kind of way. But do you think that matters? Hell no. I stand up. I'm afraid of what I'll do if I have to look at this smug, shit-eating grin another minute. I throw a dozen bills on the table and tell him, "That's not the kind of business we're in. If that's the sort of deal you're looking for, 42nd Street is about 10 blocks that way. I'm no pimp, and Catherine Brooks is certainly not a whore. This meeting is over." "Aren't you proud of me?"
"I am.
Though what I just said was in no way satisfying. It was professional. Dignified. I kept it together. I didn't even call him the ass-licking, dick-bag piece of steaming dog shit that I think he is. Go me." I walk toward the bar area in the next room, and I'm fuming. Can you see the steam coming out of my ears? No? Well, obviously you're not looking hard enough. That guy's got some set of balls. To fucking suggest that Kate is more than just a pretty face. She's brilliant, and funny, and, okay, maybe she's not nice, but I'm sure she could be if she didn't hate my guts. In any case, she deserves better, more respect than what she just got. So much more. That's when I see her, walking past the bar on her way back from the restroom. She spots me and walks over, a smile spread across her face. "So, how'd it go? He's with us, isn't he? I knew it, Drew. I knew the minute we showed him our projections he was done. And I think working together hasn't been the easiest thing, but I think your father was right. We do make a pretty good team, don't we?" I swallow hard. I look down at her hand on my arm, and then back up into those sweet, innocent eyes, and I just can't do it. I can't tell her. I blew it, Kate. Anderson's not interested.
What? What do you mean? What happened?
I stare at my $900 shoes. I screwed up. Can we just get out of here? When I look back up, her face is a mask of confused sympathy. Here I just told her that I blew the account, our account, and there's not a trace of anger in her expression. God, I'm such an asshole.
Well, let me talk to him. Maybe I can fix this.
I shake my head. No, you can't.
Let me at least try.
Kate, wait. But she's already walking away toward the table where Anderson still sits. You ever been on the freeway stuck in bumper-to-bumper traffic? And when you finally get to the head of the line, you realize the backup is because of an accident? Maybe not a bad one. Maybe just a fender bender that's already been moved to the side of the road. And all that traffic, all that wasted time, is because every driver who passes the scene has to slow down and take a look. It's ridiculous, isn't it? And you swear that when you pass by, you're not going to look, just on principle alone. But when you get there, and you're driving past the dented doors and flashing lights and smashed bumpers, what do? You slow down and look. You didn't want to, but you can't help it. It's morbid, absurd. But that's human nature for you. Watching Kate walk up to Anderson feels just like looking at the aftermath of an accident. And no matter how much I want to, I just can't look away. She stands next to his chair, a perfect, professional smile on her lips. If you look closely, you'll see the moment when what he's asking for registers in her mind. See how her smile freezes? Her brow wrinkles slightly because she can't actually believe he's suggesting what he is. And then she's stiff and unsure. Should she tell him to go fuck a duck? Should she laugh it off or politely refuse? While the wheels are turning in Kate's head, Anderson takes his finger. Can you see the slime dripping off it? And trails it slowly down her bare arm. And that's it. I snap out of my stupor. And I see red. Bright, neon, technicolor red. You ever see A Christmas Story? You know, toward the end when Ralphie beats the ever-loving shit out of the bully? I hope to God you've seen it, because then you'll know exactly what I mean when I say I'm about to go real fucking Ralphie on this son of a bitch. I walk over and put myself in front of Kate. Touch her again, and I'm going to throw you through that window pane. They'll be picking pieces of you up off of 51st for days. He chuckles. Sounds like the Crypt Keeper, doesn't he? Calm down, son. Son? Is this dipshit for real? You know something, Drew? I like you. Now there is a concept that scares the piss out of me. I need a man like you around, he continues. Somebody who's not afraid to speak his mind, to tell me what he really thinks. It seems as though my contingency isn't going to be met, but I'm going to sign with you and your firm anyway. What do you think of that? He leans back in his chair and takes a sip of his wine, completely confident in the fact that I will disregard anything he said or done for the chance to get my hands on his money. I'm going to say a great big no to that, Saul. See, we have this company policy. We don't deal with limp-dick, Viagra-popping, dirtbag motherfuckers who try to use their position to coerce women, young enough to be their daughters, into bed. Go peddle your shit somewhere else. We aren't buying. Our stares are locked on each other like two wolves on the Discovery Channel when he says, Think carefully, son. You're making a mistake. I think the only mistake I've made is wasting our time here with you. That's something I don't plan on doing a second longer. We're done here. And then I turn to Kate and tell her softly, We're leaving. With my hand on her lower back, we walk to the coat check room. I hold her coat for her and help her into it. With my hands on her shoulders, I ask, You okay? She doesn't look back at me.
I'm fine.
Right. And we all know what that means, don't we? For many men, their car is equivalent to the perfect woman. We can build her to look exactly how we want. We can ride her hard and she won't complain. And we can easily trade her in when a newer, younger model comes along. It's pretty much the ideal relationship.
I drive an Aston Martin V12. There's not many things in this world that I love, but my car is one of them. I got her after I closed my first deal. She's a beauty. She's my baby. Not that you would know by the way I'm driving at the moment. It's the typical pissed-off guy mode of driving. A death grip on the steering wheel, hard turns, fast stops, a smack on the horn at the slightest provocation. I don't think about how my attitude might be interpreted by Kate until her small voice comes from the passenger seat.
I'm sorry.
I glance quickly at her. You're sorry for what?
I never meant to send out those kinds of signals, Drew. I would never come on to a client. I didn't realize that...
Christ. Why do women always do this? Why are they so eager to blame themselves when someone treats them like shit? A guy would take a cheese grater to his tongue before admitting he screwed up. When we were 16, Matthew was dating Melissa Saber. One day, while he was in the shower, Melissa went through his sock drawer and found notes from the two other girls he was banging at the same time. She went apeshit. But you know what? By the time Matthew was done talking to her, after he flushed the evidence, not only did he convince her that she had read the notes wrong, but she was apologizing to him for going through his stuff. Unbelievable, right? I pull over to the side of the road and turn to face her. Listen to me, Kate. You didn't do anything wrong.
But you said about my blouse and his face.
Great. She thinks she was asking for it because that's what I fucking told her. Perfect. No. I was being an asshole. I didn't mean it. I was just trying to get a rise out of you. Look, in this business, some guys are just power-high pricks. They're used to getting whatever they ask for, women included. I don't want to see the similarities between Saul Anderson and myself, but they're kind of hard to miss. Listening to him tonight made me feel shitty about how I've treated Kate the last few weeks. My father wanted me to help her, mentor her. Instead, I let my cock and my overreactive sense of competition lead the way. And you're a gorgeous woman. This won't be the last time something like this happens. You have to have a thick skin. You can't let anyone rattle your confidence. You were perfect at that meeting. Really. Should have been a home run. She gives me a small smile.
Thank you.
I turn back onto the road and we drive in silence until she says, God, I could use a drink right now. Her comment throws me. It seems like such an un-Kate thing to say. She's a straight arrow, no nonsense. The kind of girl who hardly drinks, doesn't eat trans fats, and vacuums behind the couch 3 times a week. It's then that I realize that although the woman next to me occupies a permanent space in my thoughts, I really don't know much about her. Not any more than I did when I first approached her all those weeks ago at REM. It's an even bigger shock when I admit it to myself that I want to. At this juncture in my life, my idea of getting to know a woman consists of finding out if she likes it slow and sweet, or hard and dirty, top, bottom, or from behind. But the interactions I've had with Kate are different from any other woman. She's different. She's like a Rubik's Cube, so frustrating at times that you want to toss it out the goddamn window, but you don't. You can't. You're compelled to keep playing with it until you figure it out. Seriously? I ask. She shrugs.
Well, yeah. It's been a rough night. A rough few weeks, actually.
I smile and shift my baby into fifth gear. I know just the place. Don't worry. I don't plan on plying her with alcohol until she gives up the goodies. But if she happens to get wasted and tries to rip my clothes off in the alley behind the bar, don't expect me to beat her off with a stick, either. All kidding aside, this is a new beginning for Kate and me. A fresh start. I'll be a perfect gentleman. Scout's honor. Then again, I never was a Boy Scout.
Chapter 9. First time you got drunk?
13. Just before a school dance. My parents were out of town, and my date, Jennifer Brewster, thought I'd be mature to have a vodka and orange juice. But all I could find was rum. So we had rum and orange juice. We ended up puking our guts out behind the gym. To this day, I can't smell rum without wanting to hurl.
First kiss?
Tommy Wilkins, sixth grade, at the movies. He put his arm around me and stuck his tongue down my throat. I had no idea what was happening.
We're playing first and ten. For those of you who are unfamiliar with this drinking game, I'll explain. One person asks about a first. Your first trip to Disneyland, the first time you got laid, doesn't matter. And the other person has to tell about that first. If they haven't done it for the first time yet, or won't answer, they have to drink their shot. Then they have to tell you something they have done at least 10 times. Which one of us suggested this game? I've already missed 5 firsts. I have no clue.
First time you fell in love?
Make that 6. I pick up my vodka and toss it back. We're in a darkened corner of a small local bar named Howie's. It's a low-key place, kind of like the bar on Cheers. The patrons are laid back, easygoing. Not the slick, couture-wearing Manhattanites with whom I typically spend my weekend nights. I like it here, though. Except for the karaoke. Whoever invented karaoke is evil. He should be shot between the eyes with a dull bullet. Kate cocks her head to the side, appraising me.
You've never been in love?
I shake my head. Love is for suckers, sweetheart. She smiles.
Cynical much? So you don't believe love is real?
Didn't say that. My parents have been happily married for 36 years. My sister loves her husband, and he worships her.
But you've never?
I shrug. I just don't see the point. It's a whole lot of work and not much payoff. Your odds of making it for even a few years are only 50-50 at best. Too complicated for my tastes. I prefer simple and straightforward. I work, I fuck, I eat, I sleep. On Sundays, I have brunch with my mother and play basketball with the guys. Effortless. Easy. Kate sits back in her chair.
My grandmother used to say, if it's not difficult, it's not worth it. Besides, don't you get lonely?
On cue, a busty shot girl comes to our table and leans over with her hand on my shoulder and her cleavage in my face.
You need anything else, cutie?
That pretty much answers Kate's question, huh? Sure, honey. Could you bring us another round? As the waitress moves away, Kate's eyes meet mine before rolling to the ceiling.
Anyway, give me your 10.
I've had sex with more than 10 women in 1 week. Cancun. Spring break, 2004. Mexico is awesome.
Fuck, is that supposed to impress me?
I grin proudly. It impresses most women. I lean forward and lower my voice as I rub my thumb slowly against hers. Then again, you're not most women, are you? She licks her lips, her eyes on mine.
Are you flirting with me?
Definitely. Shot girl brings our drinks. I crack my knuckles. I'm up. Time to get intimate.
First blowjob?
I tried. I held out for as long as I could. I couldn't resist any longer. The smile drops from Kate's face.
You have serious issues. You know that, right?
Borrowing some peer pressure from the Breakfast Club, I goad, Come on, Claire, just answer a simple question. Kate picks up her drink and knocks it back impressively. I am both shocked and appalled. You've never given a blowjob? Please, God, don't let Kate be one of those women. You know the ones I mean. Cold, unadventurous. The ones who just don't do that. The ones who insist on making love, which means fucking in the missionary position only. They're the reason men like Elliot Spitzer and Bill Clinton risk the destruction of their political careers, because they're just that desperate for a happy ending. She flinches as the vodka burns down her throat.
Billy doesn't like oral sex. He doesn't like to give it, I mean.
She's got to be drunk. There's no way in holy hell that Kate would be telling me this, were she not completely and utterly shit-faced. She hides it well, don't you think? But she still hasn't answered my question. As for her fiancé, he's a pussy. No pun intended.
My mother always told me, anyone worth doing is worth doing well. Okay, she didn't actually say those exact words, but you get the picture. If I'm not eager to go down on a chick, then I'm not screwing her. Sorry if that's crude, but that's just how it is. And this is Kate we're talking about here. I'd eat her for breakfast every day of the week and twice on Sunday. And I can't think of a single man I know who would disagree with me. Billy is a total fucking idiot. So, since he's never, you know, he doesn't think it's fair that I should do it to him. So, no, I've never... She can't even say it. I have to help her out. Given head? Sucked him off? Been teabagged? Blown his balls and his mind? She covers her face and giggles. I'm pretty sure it's the most adorable thing I've ever seen. She takes her hands off her face and blows out a breath. Moving on, my 10, I've been with Billy Warren for over 10 years. I choke on my beer. 10 years? She nods. Almost 11. So you started dating when you were 15, yeah. So, if I'm hearing her correctly, what she's most likely saying is no man has ever gone down on her. Don't mean to beat a dead horse, but I just can't wrap my mind around this. That's what she's saying, right? I could cry. What a fucking sin. Spare the karaoke guy. Save the bullet for Kate's boyfriend. How long have you been engaged? About 7 years. He asked me the week before I left for college. Those two sentences tell me exactly what kind of man shithead Billy happens to be. Insecure, jealous, clingy. He knew his girl was out of his league, and she was going places and would most likely leave him in the dust. So what does he do? He asks her to marry him, pretty much trapping her before she knew any better. That's why the ring is so, you know, small. But it doesn't matter to me. Billy worked for 6 months to get me this ring. Bussing tables, mowing lawns, killing himself. This tiny stone means more to me than the biggest rock at Tiffany's. And those few sentences tell me exactly what kind of woman Kate Brooks is, too. A lot of Manhattan women are all about flash. The brand of the car, the name on the bag, the size of the ring. Superficial. Empty. I should know. I've slept with most of them. But Kate is the real deal. Genuine. She's all about quality, not quantity. She reminds me of my sister, actually. Even with all the money we grew up with, Alexandra doesn't really give a rat's ass about labels or what other people think. That's how she ended up with a guy like Steven. He and Alexandra started dating in high school when he was a sophomore and she was a senior. That maneuver made him a legend at St. Mary's Prep. To this day, his name is invoked in her hallowed halls with reverence. What's that? Yes, I went to Catholic school. You're surprised? You shouldn't be. My profanity has a certain religious flavor that can only be learned through a lifetime of Catholic education. Jesus H. Christ. God damn it. Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. Fucking Christ Almighty. Holy fucking shit. And that's just what we heard from the priests. Don't get me started on the nuns. Anyway, where was I? That's right, Stephen and Alexandra. Stephen is not the most handsome guy, nor the most suave. He's not a player, he never was. Then how did he manage to bag a prize like my sister, you ask? Confidence. Stephen never doubted himself. Never thought for a second that he wasn't good enough for the bitch. He refused to be intimidated. He always exuded that quiet self-assurance that women are attracted to, because he knew that no one could ever love my sister the way that he did. So when Alexandra left for college years before Stephen could join her, did he worry? Hell no. He wasn't afraid to let her go, because he knew with absolute certainty that one day she would come back. To him. Obviously, Billy No Blow Warren wasn't so sure. 2 hours later, Kate and I are certifiably drunk. See us there? Staring at the stage, sipping our beers with those glazed looks on our faces. You can learn a lot about a person when they're drunk, and I have learned a boatload about Kate. When she drinks, She's a talker. Think she's a screamer, too? Never mind. That part comes later. Kate's hometown is Greenville, Ohio. Mom still lives there, running the Western-themed diner her family owns. It sounds like a real middle America type of place. The kind where the locals eat breakfast before work, and teenagers congregate after a football game. Kate waitressed there during her high school years. She didn't mention a dad, though, and I didn't ask. And despite being valedictorian, Kate used to be quite the wild child. That explains why she holds her liquor so well. Apparently, she and the shithead spent their youth breaking into roller skating rinks after hours, shoplifting and singing in a band together. Oh yeah, that's what the donkey dick still does for a living. He's a musician. You know what that means, right? Yep, unemployed. Why is Kate still with this loser? That's the million-dollar question, kids. I'm not a snob. I don't care if you pump gas or run the register at Mickey fucking D's. If you're a man, you work. You don't leech off your girlfriend. Karaoke sucks, I grunt, as the blonde transvestite at the microphone finishes the song, I Will Survive. Kate tilts her head to the side. He's not so bad. I think my ears are bleeding. I motion to the other comatose faces around the bar. And they're dying a slow death. Kate sips her beer. It's just the wrong song for this kind of place. The right one would wake them up. You're nuts. She slurs just a little. Betcha I could do it. No way. Not unless you plan on doing a singing striptease. And that, boys and girls, is a show I would give my left nut to see. She takes my cell phone off the table and wags her finger at me. No pictures. Can't have any evidence. Then she gets up and walks on stage. Hear the groans of pain from my barmates as the music begins. It's a preemptive response to what they assume will be more auditory torture from another tanked-up, tone-deaf American Idol reject. But then she starts to sing. I don't stand a chance. When you look at me that way, I'll do anything you want me to, anything for you. And I'll shout it for the whole world to know, oh, honey, that's what you do to me, and I don't mind at all. Good freaking God. Her voice is deep and perfect and arousing, like a phone sex worker at one of those 900 numbers. It floats around the room and washes over me like verbal foreplay. My body reacts instantly to the sound. I'm as hard as a fucking rock. You know I'm not a girl who cares to see or gives a damn what anyone thinks of me. I go down hard, I stand my ground, but whenever you come around, I'm helpless. Baby, I don't stand a chance. Every time you look at me that way, it brings me to my knees. She starts swaying her hips in time to the music, and I imagine how perfect she would look on her knees. I can't take my eyes off of her. She's mesmerizing. Hypnotic. And I'm changing. Never thought I'd be like this, but you showed me a better way. I'll do anything for your kiss. In all my days, I've never seen a man who means everything to me. I can leave everything else in the dust, but it's you I just can't give up. She has the full attention of every man in the place, but her eyes, those stunning onyx eyes, are looking right at me. And it makes me feel like a god. I've never let anyone get this close to me before. Distance keeps me safe and keeps me sane. But now you've got my heart twisted with yours, better than it's ever been. There's a lot to lose, but even so much more to win. Oh, baby. She tosses her hair back, and I picture her doing just that as she rides me with long and hard strokes. Jesus. I've gotten lap dances from some of the best strippers in the city, and I've never come in my pants. Not once. But that's exactly what I'm going to do if this song doesn't end real fucking soon. I feel so helpless when you look at me that way. I'll do anything for you. Only for you.
The bar erupts into hoots and whistles and clapping hands as Kate walks off the stage. Sounds like a friggin' rodeo. She smiles giddily as she walks toward me. I stand up, and she stops just inches away. She looks up at me and raises one brow.
Told you I could wake them up.
I softly say, that was... you are amazing. I want to kiss her, more than I want to fucking breathe. Images of last night flash in my mind, of how goddamn good she felt in my arms. I need to kiss her. The smile slowly slides off her face, and I know she needs it too. I push a strand of her hair back behind her ear and lean in. And the shrill scream of her cell phone comes between us. Kate blinks like she's waking up from a trance and picks up her phone.
Hello?
She flinches and pulls the phone from her ear to gain some distance from the shouting voice on the other end.
No, Billy, I didn't forget. I just had a difficult evening. No, yes, I'm at a bar called Howie's. It's on...
She stares at her phone a moment, and I'm guessing the dipshit just hung up on her. Her eyes are completely sober now.
I have to go outside. Billy's coming to pick me up.
Won't this be a treat? I get to meet a walking, talking asshole. It'll be like Freak Night at the carnival. While we wait outside on the sidewalk, Kate turns to me.
What are we going to say to your father?
And there's the question I've avoided asking myself all night. The old man's a stand-up guy, chivalrous, traditional. I'd like to think he'd be proud of my defending Kate's honor. But he's also a businessman. And the truth is, I could have defended Kate and still signed Anderson. It's what I should have done. It's what I would have done had it been anyone but her on the negotiating table. I'll handle my father.
What? No. No, we're a team, remember? We both lost this client.
I'm the one who went off on the guy.
And I'm the one who didn't stop you. Now, I appreciate what you did for me, Drew, really. You were pretty magnificent, actually.
Maybe it's just the vodka, but her words make me feel all warm and fuzzy inside.
But I don't need a white knight, she goes on. I'm a big girl, and I can certainly handle whatever your father may dish out. We'll talk to him together on Monday morning. Agreed?
This clinches it. Kate Brooks is one incredible woman. Agreed. It's then that a black thunderbird roars down the street and stops in front of us. Yes, I said thunderbird. Can you say totally 80s weekend? A guy with an average build and light brown hair gets out of it. Is it just me, or does he look like a douchebag to you, too? The old-fashioned kind. Your grandma's vinegar and water type of douche. With a frown, he zeroes in on Kate before looking me over, and then he looks even more pissed. Maybe dumbass isn't as stupid as I thought. He recognizes competition when he sees it. He comes around and opens the passenger door for Kate. She sighs and gives me a tight smile. Then she takes two steps toward the car and trips on a crack in the sidewalk. I move to catch her, but Needle Dick is closer and beats me to it. He holds her at arm's length, the anger on his face turning to disgust.
Are you fucking wasted?
I don't really appreciate his tone. Someone needs to teach him some fucking manners.
Don't start, Billy. I've had a bad night, Kate tells him.
A bad night? Really? As in having the biggest gig of your life and your girlfriend not showing up? Was it that bad, Kate? Gig? Did he really just say gig? She actually sleeps with this moron? You've got to be kidding me. She pulls out of his grasp.
You know what?
She starts off strong and then deflates.
Just let's go home.
She gets in the car and Bitch Boy slams it closed behind her. He glares at me as he walks around to the driver's side. Kate rolls down the window.
Good night, Drew, and thanks. For everything.
I give her a smile despite my growing desire to smash her fiancé's face in. Anytime. And the Thunderbird roars away, leaving me, for the second night in a row, aching for Kate Brooks. I rub my hand down my face as a voice comes from behind me.
Hey, cutie, I just got off.
Want to get off with me? It's Shot Girl. She's decent looking. Nothing to write home about, but she's there. And after seeing Kate take off with the spineless weasel she's marrying, I refuse to spend the rest of the evening alone. Sure, baby. I'll get us a cab. I'll come back for my car later, when I'm actually sober enough to drive without wrapping it around a lamppost. It's a lousy lay. Some advice. Being as still and silent as a corpse when a guy is fucking you will never be remembered as a stellar sexual experience. The other reason it sucks is because I can't get Kate out of my head. I keep comparing Shot Girl to her, and the former, of course, comes up disappointingly short. You'll think I'm a sleazeball for saying that? Come on, are you going to tell me you never imagined that it was Brad Pitt sticking it to you instead of your beer-bellied husband? That's what I thought. Still think I'm a scumbag? Then you're in luck. I'll be getting just what you think I deserve very soon. Chapter 10. My father was not pleased with how I handled the Anderson situation. I'd been rash, unprofessional, blah, blah, blah. And because of my seniority, he held me more accountable for losing the client than Kate. But the fact that I was on the shit list at the office for a while didn't hit me as hard as you'd think. Mostly because I have no regrets over how I'd reacted. If I had to do it all over again, I wouldn't change a thing. So, maybe my father was disappointed in me, but to tell you the truth, by the time he got done reaming me out, I was pretty fucking disappointed in him, too. Also, in the 4 weeks following that disastrous meeting, things between Kate and me have continued to evolve. We still trade punches at work, but they're more jabs to the chest, meant to sting, rather than right hooks to the jaw, designed to knock each other on our respective asses. We share ideas. Help each other out. My father was right about that, at least. Kate and I complement each other, balance each other's strengths and weaknesses. Somewhere along the line, she's become more to me than just a set of legs I want to crawl between, more than a pair of pants I desperately want to get down. Now she's Kate, a friend. A friend who causes my dick to stand at attention every time she walks into the room, but that's my cross to bear, I guess. Because as much as I still want her, and as sure as I am a part of her wants me, Kate is just not the cheating kind. At least not the kind who could live with herself afterward. Now, I know what you're thinking. But what happened? How did a self-assured, handsome, wickedly charming young man like myself become the flu-infected, sloppy shut-in you first met? We're getting there, trust me. To show you the whole picture, there are a few more players you need to meet in the shit pit soap opera that is now my life. You've seen Dirtbag Warren. He'll be back later, unfortunately. And now you'll meet Dee Dee Warren. She's the jackass's cousin. But you shouldn't hold that against her. She's also Kate's best friend. I'll show you. I saw you talking to the brunette with the nice rack. You go back to her place? Matthew asks me. He, Jack, and I are having lunch at a diner a few blocks from the office. We're discussing our most recent Saturday night. We didn't make it that far.
What do you mean?
I smirk, remembering what an exhibitionist the girl had been. I mean, that cab will never be the same again, and I think we scarred the driver for life. Jack laughs. You're such a fucking dog, man. Nah. I saved doggy style for when we were actually inside her apartment. Don't give me that look again. We've been over this. Guys, sex, talk. Besides, despite the wild eagerness of Taxi Girl, the sex was subpar. She wasn't even Colgate. She was more like some generic brand of toothpaste they stock in low-grade hotel rooms, whose name you can't even remember after you brush with it. Hey, Kate. Matthew says, looking behind me. I didn't see her approaches. We'll stop here for just a moment. This is important. See the look on her face?
the thin line of her lips, the slight wrinkle of her brow. She heard what I said, and she doesn't look too happy about it, does she? I missed this the first time around, but you should make a note of it. This moment will come back to bite me in the ass later on. I turned to look at her. Her expression is now blank and passive. You want to join us? I ask. No, thanks. I just finished having lunch with a friend, actually. And up walks her friend. She's wearing ankle-high black boots, black tights that are ripped at strategic places up and down her legs, a minuscule skirt, a strapless hot pink top, and a short knitted gray sweater. Her hair is long, strawberry blonde, and wavy, her lips a shiny red, and her quick amber eyes look us over from beneath a curtain of thick, dark lashes. She's interesting. I wouldn't say pretty, but striking in a sexy, street fashion kind of way. Matthew Fisher, Jack O'Shea, Drew Evans, this is Dee Dee Warren. On hearing my name, Dee Dee's eyes turn sharply in my direction. It feels like she's analyzing me. Sort of how a guy would look at a car engine right before he busts it up. So, you're Drew. I've heard about you. Kate told her friend about me. Interesting. Oh, yeah? What have you heard? She shrugs. I could tell you, but then I'd have to kill you. She points her finger at me. You just keep on being nice to my Katie girl here. You know, if you'd like to keep your balls attached to your pecker, that is. Although her tone is light, I get the distinct impression Dee Dee isn't fucking around. I smile. I've been trying to show her how nice I can be. She keeps turning me down. She chuckles. Then Matthew interjects smoothly. So, Dee Dee, is that short for something? Donna? Deborah? Kate grins mischievously. Dolores. It's a family name. Her grandmother's. She hates it. Dolores gives Kate the stink eye. Shifting into pickup mode, Matthew replies, Dolores is a gorgeous name for a gorgeous girl. Plus, it rhymes with clitoris. And I really know my way around them. Big fan. Dolores smiles slowly at Matthew and runs one finger across her lower lip. Then she turns to the rest of us and says, Anywho, I have to jet. Gotta get to work. Nice meeting you, boys. She hugs Kate and throws Matthew a wink as she walks away. She's got to get to work? I ask. I thought that strip clubs didn't open until 4. Kate just smiles. Dee's not a stripper. She just dresses like that to throw people off. So they're shocked when they find out what she really does. What does she do? Matthew asks. She's a rocket scientist. You're fucking with us, Jack voices what all three of us are thinking. Afraid not. Dolores is a chemist. One of her clients is NASA. Her lab works on improving the efficiency of the fuel they use in the space shuttles. She shudders. Dee Dee Warren with access to highly explosive substances. It's something I try not to think about every day. After a beat, Matthew speaks up. Brooks, you've got to hook me up. I'm a nice guy. Let me take your friend out. She won't regret it. Kate thinks a moment. Okay, sure. You seem like Dee's type. She hands him a business card. But I have to warn you, she's the love 'em and leave 'em with bruises type of girl. If you're looking for a good time for a night or two, then definitely call her. If you're looking for anything deeper than that, I'd stay away. We're speechless. And then Matthew rises from the table, walks up to Kate, and kisses her on the cheek. I suddenly have the urge to put my hand down his throat and rip his tonsils out. Is that wrong? You are my new best friend, he tells her. Kate misreads the scowl on my face. Don't pout, Drew. It's not my fault your friends like me better than you. She means Stephen, too. A few days ago, he was frantically trying to find the perfect place to take the bitch for their wedding anniversary. Apparently, Kate's neighbor is the maitre d' at Shea, the most exclusive restaurant in the city. She was able to get him a table for that evening. Alexandra must have done things to Stephen that night that I don't even want to contemplate. Because ever since, Stephen Reinhardt would happily take a bullet to the chest for Kate Brooks.
It's the boobs, I tell her. If I had a set like yours, they'd like me better, too. A few weeks ago, that comment would have pissed her off. Now she just shakes her head and laughs. The night before Thanksgiving is officially the biggest bar night of the year. Everyone goes out. Everyone is looking for a good time. Usually, Matthew, Jack, and I start the night at my father's day before Thanksgiving office party and work our way out to the clubs afterward. It's tradition. So you can imagine my surprise when I enter the large conference room and see Matthew's arm around the woman who I can only assume is his date for the evening, Dolores Warren. Since he met her 2.5 weeks ago, Matthew's been MIA on the weekends, and I'm starting to suspect why. I'll have to talk to him tomorrow. Beside them are my father and Kate. And for the second time in my life, Kate Brooks leaves me breathless. She's wearing a deep burgundy dress that hugs her in all the right places, and strappy heeled shoes that send my imagination spinning into X-rated territory. Her hair falls around her shoulders in soft, shining waves. My hand twitches to touch it as I walk toward her. Then someone in the middle of the room moves, and I see that she's not alone. Fuck me. Everyone brings their significant other to these kinds of things. I shouldn't be surprised that the dickwad is here. He pulls at the tie of his suit like a frigging 10-year-old, obviously uncomfortable in it. Pussy. I button the jacket of my own perfectly tailored Armani and make my way over. Drew, my father greets me. Though things between him and me were tense for a few days, they quickly went back to normal. He can never stay pissed at me for long. Look at this face. Could you?
I was just telling Mr. Warren, he says, about that deal Kate closed last week, how lucky we are to have her.
Have her? The word lucky doesn't even come close. It's all an act, Dolores teases. Beneath her corporate suit and that good girl persona beats the heart of a true rebel. I could tell you stories about Katie that would put hair on your eyeballs. Kate turns stern eyes on her friend. Thank you, Dee. Please don't.
Come, Stain, smiles, puts his arm around Kate's waist, and rests his lips on the top of her head. I need a drink. Or a punching bag. Now.
Words fly out of my mouth like well-aimed bullets.
That's right. You were quite the little delinquent back in the day, weren't you, Kate? Dad, did you know she used to sing in a band? That's how you supported yourself through business school, right? Guess it beats pole dancing.
She chokes on her drink. Gentleman that I am, I hand her a napkin. And Billy here, that's what he still does. You're a musician, right? He looks at me like I'm a pile of dog crap that he just stepped in.
That's right.
So, tell us, Billy, are you like a Brett Michaels kind of rocker, or more like a Vanilla Ice? See how his jaw clenches? How his eyes narrow? Bring it, monkey boy, please.
Neither.
Why don't you grab your accordion or whatever you play and pop up on stage? There's a lot of money floating around this room. Maybe you could book a wedding. Or a bar mitzvah.
Almost there. I don't play those types of venues.
This should do it.
Wow, in this economy, I didn't think the poor and jobless could be so picky.
Listen, you piece of...
Billy, honey, could you get me another drink from the bar? I'm almost done with this one. Kate pulls on his arm, cutting off what I'm sure would have been a brilliant retort.
Are you feeling the sarcasm?
And then she turns toward me. And she doesn't sound nearly as friendly.
Drew, I just remembered I have some documents to give you about the Genesis account. They're in my office. Let's go.
I don't move. I don't answer her. My eyes are still locked in a staring contest with shit for brains.
It's a party, Kate, my father says, clueless. You should save the work for Monday.
It'll just take a minute, she tells him with a smile, before grabbing my arm and dragging me away.
Once we're in her office, Kate slams the door behind us. I straighten my sleeves, then smile benevolently.
If you wanted to be alone with me that badly, all you had to do was ask.
She doesn't appreciate my humor.
What are you doing, Drew?
Doing?
Why are you insulting Billy? Do you know how hard it was for me to get him to come here tonight?
Poor Billy, stuck in a room with the big bad successful bankers. Then why did you frigging bring him?
He's my fiancé.
He's an asshole. She looks up sharply.
Billy and I have been through a lot together. You don't know him.
I know he's not good enough for you. Not by a long shot.
Please stop trying to embarrass him.
I was just pointing out the facts. If the truth embarrasses your boyfriend, then that's his problem, not mine.
Is this a jealousy thing?
For the record, I have never been jealous a day in my life. Just because when I see them together, I can't decide if I want to puke or punch his fucking lights out. She calls that jealousy? Don't flatter yourself.
I know you have this thing for me, but...
Wait one goddamn minute. Let's back the fuck up, shall we? I have a thing for you? I'm sorry, was it my hand grabbing your crotch in my office a couple of months back? Because I remember it the other way around. And now she's pissed.
You're such a bastard sometimes.
Well, then we're a perfect fit, because you're a first-class bitch most of the time. Fire dances in her eyes as she raises her half-filled glass. Don't you fucking dare. You throw that drink at me. I'm not responsible for what I do after. I'll give you a minute to guess what she does. Yep, she threw the drink at me. God damn it! I grab the tissues from her desk and wipe my dripping face.
I'm not one of your random sluts. Don't you ever talk to me like that again.
My face is dry, but my shirt and jacket are still soaked. I throw the tissues down. Doesn't matter. I'm leaving anyway. I have a date to get to. She scoffs.
A date? Wouldn't a date involve actual conversation? Don't you mean you have a quick fuck to get to?
I close my hands around her waist and pull her in. In a low voice, I tell her, my fucks are never quick. They're long and thorough. And you should be careful, Kate. Now you're the one who sounds jealous. Her palms are flat against my chest, and my face is just inches from hers.
I can't stand you.
Feelings mutual, I tell her quickly. And then we're at it again. My mouth, her lips, joined hot and heavy. My hands are buried in her hair, cradling her head. Her hands grip the front of my shirt, holding me close. I know what you're thinking. And yes, apparently arguing for Kate and me is akin to foreplay. It seems to get us both all charged up. I just hope we get to come before we kill each other. Just when things are starting to get good, there's a pounding on the door. Kate either doesn't hear it, or, like me, she doesn't give a damn. Kate? Kate, are you in there? The cocksucker's voice cuts through the lust that has us stuck together like glue. Kate pulls away. She stares at me a minute, her eyes guilty, her fingers resting on the lips I just tasted. You know what? Screw this. Do I look like a goddamn yo-yo to you? I don't play games with people. I don't appreciate being played with. If Kate can't decide what she wants, I'll decide for her. Stick a fork in me. I'm fucking done. I step up to the door and open it wide, giving shithead plenty of room as he walks in. Then I smile. You can have her now. I'm finished. And I don't even think about looking back as I walk out. Chapter 11. Thanksgiving is held at my parents' country house upstate every year. It's always a small family affair. There are my parents, of course. You've met my father. My mother is an older, shorter version of Alexandra. For all her strong feminist beliefs, she'd been a top-notch attorney before motherhood lured her away. She loves playing the happy homemaker. After she and my father hit the big time financially, she also dedicated herself to various charitable organizations. It's what she still does with most of her time now that Alexandra and I have flown the nest. Then there's Stephen's father, George Reinhardt. Picture Stephen 30 years from now with thinning hair and a serious case of crow's feet. Mrs. Reinhardt passed away when we were teenagers. To my knowledge,
George hasn't been out on a single date since. He spends a lot of time at work, quietly crunching numbers in his office. He's a great guy. And that brings us to the Fishers, Matthew's parents. Can't wait for you to see them. They're a fucking riot. Frank and Estelle Fisher are the most mellow people I've ever met. They're almost catatonic. Imagine Ward and June Cleaver after they've smoked a giant bong of marijuana. That's Frank and Estelle. You'd think Matthew's parents would be a little more high-strung, wouldn't you? I have a theory. They had Matthew later in life, and I think he sucked out any energy they had left, like a parasite. Topping off the mix are Matthew, Stephen, Alexandra, and me. Oh, and of course the other woman in my life. I can't believe I haven't mentioned her before. She is the only female to ever truly hold my heart in her hand. I am her slave. She asks, and I do. Gladly. Her name is Mackenzie. She's got long blonde hair and the biggest blue eyes you'll ever see. She's almost 4. See her there? On the other end of the seesaw I'm currently riding? So, Mackenzie, have you decided what you want to be when you grow up? Yep. I want to be a princess, and I want to marry a prince and live in a castle. I need to talk to my sister. Disney is dangerous. Corrosive, brainwashing bullshit, if you ask me. Or you could go into real estate. Then you could buy the castle yourself, and you won't need the prince. She thinks I'm funny. She laughs. Uncle Drew, how's I gonna have a baby with no prince? Oh, boy. You've got plenty of time for babies. After you get your master's in business or your medical degree. Oh, or you can be a CEO and start a daycare at your office. Then you can bring your babies to work with you every day. Mama don't go to an office. Mama sold herself short, sweetie. My sister was a brilliant trial attorney. She could have gone all the way to the Supreme Court. Seriously, she was that good. Alexandra worked throughout her entire pregnancy and had a nanny all lined up. Then she held Mackenzie in her arms for the first time. She told the nanny the same day her services wouldn't be needed. Not that I blame her. I couldn't imagine a more important job than making sure my perfect niece grows up happy and healthy. Uncle Drew? Yes? Is you gonna die alone? I smirk. I don't plan on dying for a long time, honey. Mama says you're gonna die alone. She told Daddy that you're gonna die, and it'll be days till the cleaning lady find your rotten corpse. Lovely. Thank you, Alexandra. What's a corpse, Uncle Drew? Wow. I'm saved from having to answer when I see Matthew walking down the back steps into the yard. Hey, sweetie, look who's here. She hops off the seesaw and flings herself into Matthew's open arms. Before you ask, the answer is no. When she is older, my little darling will never hook up with a guy like me. She'll be too smart for that. I'll make sure of it. Guess that makes me a hypocrite, huh? That's okay. I can live with that. Matthew puts Mackenzie down and walks over. Hey, man. What's up? You go out early last night? He asks me. You never came back to the party. I shrug. My head wasn't in it. I hit the gym and went to bed. The truth is, I spent 3 hours pounding the hell out of the punching bag, imagining all the while that it was Billy Warren's face. You hung out with that Dolores chick? He nods. Her, Kate, and Billy. I shake my head. That guy licks ass. Mackenzie walks over to us and holds up a glass jar half-filled with dollar bills. I slide a dollar into it. He's not so bad. Idiots annoy me. Mackenzie holds up the jar again, and in goes another dollar. The jar? It was invented by my sister, who apparently thinks my language is too harsh for her offspring. It's the bad word jar. Every time someone, usually me, swears, they have to pay a dollar. At this rate, that thing is going to put Mackenzie through college. So what's the deal with you and Dolores? He smiles. We're hanging out. She's cool. Usually Matthew is more forthcoming with the details. It's not like I get off on his stories, but you have to understand.
Matthew and I have been friends since birth. That means every kiss, every breast, every handjob, blowjob, pearl necklace, and lay has been shared and discussed. And now he's stonewalling me. What's up with that?